Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, I'm Johnny Owen, and this is the Best 11 podcast from TalkSport. Mark Webster and I ask our guests 11 questions all about their love of football, from their earliest memories of the game to how their matchday rituals have changed over the years. And at the end, they'll tell us their Best 11, a team made up of anyone who's ever played for their club, along with a manager of their choice. Will they go for players they've seen in the flesh, or will they rely on reputation? Let's find out. Our guest today is a man widely credited as being one of the founders of the UK rave scene. He's a superstar DJ who played at the Hacienda for years. It is the brilliant Graham Park. Graham, welcome to your Best 11. Can you start by telling us who you support and why?
Well, anyone who's followed me and anyone who's aware of me will know that there's only one team in the park world, and that is the famous Aberdeen.
And is it a geographic thing? You're an Aberdeen boy, born and bred?
Well, I was born in Aberdeen.
Yeah.
But I did leave when I was very little. My family moved to Fife. However, every summer my dad would go out. He was in the TA, so in the summer he'd disappear for 2 or 3 weeks. And me, my brother and my mum would then go and spend 2 or 3 weeks in Aberdeen. So born there, left very little, but did spend like all my childhood every summer in Aberdeen, split between my two sets of grandparents.
Fantastic. And can you tell us what your earliest memories of football were?
Oh gosh, my earliest memories of football were, anyone in Scotland will get this, anyone in Scotland who's over 40 will get this, Arthur Montford on ScotSport. And on sports scene as well. What was his name?
Archie McPherson.
Yeah. With his great phrases like "stramash" in the box.
Great broadcaster, Archie McPherson. Fantastic.
No, exactly. But those are in the days that STV we'd have ScotSport for a couple of seasons. Then that would be BBC would have Sports Scene for a couple of seasons. And my memories are, well, as a child of the 60s, my memories were black and white TV, then colour TV.
Yeah.
But then a disappointment that the pitch wasn't green. It was just mud, especially in the box.
So you waited in the years for telly to go colour, and it was an uglier colour than black and white.
Exactly. I remember when we got colour telly, it was summer, and I couldn't believe watching Wimbledon. It was like an amazing experience because it was all beautiful green lawns. But then it got to September and the football started, and then it got to Christmas. And you remember, it wasn't just Scotland and England as well.
True.
The box was just horrible, mud everywhere.
Yeah.
But that's my first memories. And then I think it was being up in Aberdeen for like school holidays and like half term or something. And my late grandpa, it would have been 69 or 70, so I would have been 6 or 7. And he's like, right, it's time you came to Pittodrie, and took me on a cold autumn evening to see Aberdeen play Celtic at Pittodrie, and that would be my first game. And honestly, I vividly remember that because being a wee laddie, being surrounded by, you know, grown men, and it was mainly men, swearing. And my grandpa's seat was two rows back by the halfway line. So just the noise, the thud of grown men banging into each other on the pitch, you know, and hearing the ball. And oh, I just remember it's fantastic, absolutely fantastic.
What was that ground like then? I've never had the pleasure of
It's on the beach, isn't it, famously?
It's literally on the beach. So it's going to be bracing, I'm going to assume, when the wind's in a certain direction, if nothing else. Yeah.
Oh, it's bracing even in May. You know, when this, because we haven't, since the Premier League, the smaller top flight, our season always starts at the beginning of August. Even in August, it's bracing. But in the winter, oh my God, it's freezing. And you can sometimes get this wind that swirls round the park. So I've been to games in the winter where the keeper will kick the ball, and as it gets to the halfway line, it kind of curves back.
Just stops
towards...
and starts again.
Oh, it really is. It's character building. It really is. I mean, we are hoping to move to a new purpose-built stadium.
Oh, right.
Just out the centre of town. But that's kind of gone on hold because of the pandemic.
Sure.
But we do have, for the first time ever, last year, we opened a new training ground. We've never had a training ground. Aberdeen have famously had to book leisure centres and book outdoor facilities in the Aberdeen area. And there's lots of stories of like not being able to book leisure centres because netball teams and schools and colleges have been there. Well, I know it's laughable but awful, but in recent years, our previous chairman, Stuart Milne, and now our newer chairman, Dave Cormack, who's an Aberdonian who's made his fortune in America and has got strong links with Atlanta United. We've opened a state-of-the-art training facility where the new stadium is going to be. And honestly, everyone just raves about it. And McInnes, our fantastic manager McInnes, is just like, this is what I've been waiting for 7 or 8 years, which it's been there.
All challenging the top flight.
There's those amazing, which I'm sure we'll touch on later in much more detail, but there's amazing footage of Ferguson training on the beach, isn't it, with the great Aberdeen team of his time, you know, literally with running through a gale, a North Sea gale on the beach. It certainly worked, didn't it, considering what the team were like and what they did at that time.
Think about Aberdeen Beach, and as a kid, I used to go down there. It's beautiful. It's a long, really long, golden sandy beach, and it looks amazing, but as a kid you realize it's the bloody North Sea.
True.
There's a great, in fact, if you've not heard it, you should search Billy Connolly's sketch about
it's fantastic.
And as a child who spent summers on that beach, I can tell you it's a very, very accurate portrayal of what it's like.
I do like to think of Aberdeen's entire football life being curtailed by badminton. I think that's only appropriate, I have to say. So, Parky, who was your favourite player as a kid? I'm going to guess you held an Aberdeen player in great esteem in those days.
Yeah, when I was a kid, when I was at primary school in Kirkcaldy, I quite like being a goalkeeper. So my favourite player was Bobby Clark, who was a legendary Aberdeen keeper. And of course, in his day, it was bare hands. You didn't see goalkeeper go on.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had the classic green jumper and white shorts. And it was bare hands. He was also Scotland keeper as well. Sadly though, he was the keeper who let 5 in against England,
right?
which was awful. But I used to just say, well, I'll go and go and I'll be Bobby Clark. I just thought he was great.
Was he the keeper that started what I guess has become one of the popular caricatures in football of the dodgy Scottish keeper? Or
I wouldn't say started it, because up until I was going to come to this, actually touch on this later. But
because it's unavoidable, that's why, Graham.
It's unavoidable because obviously after him you had Alan Ruff.
Georgie Woods. Yeah.
You know, and yes, there are some.
It was the stereotype, wasn't it? Scotland produced great managers, a terrible goalkeeper. It's weird how that stereotype
How that works.
Off.
Yeah, quite.
Strange.
I know, but the thing is, Scotland. And if we're going to talk about Scotland, I just have to remind you all that, I mean, we've got a Welshman here, so he probably won't rise to this. But of course, England's first match as World Cup champions in 1967 was against Scotland, which of course they lost.
Mostly 3-2.
Of course they lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, which unofficially made Scotland champions of the world. So. Yeah.
Especially when you got Jim Baxter sitting on the ball. Do you know what I mean? Just when they win in. That's what.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then, of course, in the 70s and 80s, Scotland had a better qualifying record for the World Cup than England did because we didn't miss. Which is the one that England missed? But anyway, but then.
78.
When?
Yeah.
74.
That's right. But when we got to
1994, I can
name apparently the list goes on. I didn't realise.
Well, but Scotland knocked, well, famously, infamously knocked Wales at a few times. Joe Jordan with his hand and a penalty at Ninian Park.
Nice.
I remember it. I was there for the second one.
Well, the famous game that Jock Steen.
That's right. Jock Steen passed away. That's right. That's right. I was there that night.
Yeah. But of course, when we get to the late 90s, that's when our keepers starts to become pretty good. So that's a bizarre twist.
There was an upturn. You're right. Now, to be fair, yeah, it's a good point. Well made. Now, just before we get into sort of pursuing the way that you watch your football, I just want to take on your travels as well, because Parker, you ended up, I mean, famously, in terms of your career as a music man and DJ, we all know that Hacienda for 10 glorious years was your home. But before that, Nottingham was your home, wasn't it?
That's right. I left Scotland when I was in my late teens. My parents moved to the East Midlands, and my dad got a job in the East Midlands. I stayed in Scotland. I'm not moving to England. I want to finish my exams at school and go to university up here. But then followed them down when I'd finished school to spend the summer and realised it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, I lived in Kirkcaldy in Fife.
Yeah.
So, Edinburgh was close. Glasgow was a bit further, but when I was in the East Midlands, I realised that Nottingham, Leicester, Derby, a bit further to Birmingham in Coventry, and then London was like an hour and a half away.
Yeah.
And I thought, it's pretty good down here. And I used to, my dad used to work for Next, and he would get up at 5 a.m, and he was an area manager for a massive part of the Midlands. And every morning he'd be driving to all these great cities. And I'd just tag along and visit record shops and buy records. And so I stayed. I stayed in the East Midlands. And when my parents moved back to Scotland, I stayed and ended up in Nottingham, started working in a record shop called Selector Disc.
Yeah, Staff of Legend.
Famously, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the owner of the record shop bought a nightclub. And because his office was on the same floor that I ran the singles and secondhand department, he said, I like the music you play in the shop, so I want you to DJ at the club. Now, I played in bands and I had no desire to be a DJ whatsoever. I wanted to be like a rock and roll star or a pop star.
Yeah. That was the sexy thing then, wasn't it?
Of course.
It was to be in a band.
Yeah.
Well, it was. So I reluctantly agreed and I just loved it because at the end of the night, to start with, it was £25. But that was all mine.
That's when nice. You play in a band, lovely bit of cash in hands. That was Graham.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but when you played in a band, first of all, you had to hire a transit van and then lug your equipment in, set it up. Then you had to pay the drummer's girlfriend to do the door.
Yes, and you had the drummer to deal with and all those different personalities. Absolutely,
yeah. And not just a bag of records.
Yeah, yeah.
So exactly. At the end of the night, if you're lucky, you got £3 or £4, maybe £5 each. Right. So I did two nights a week at the garage in Nottingham and still worked at the record shop, and it was all mine. But it turned out that people actually loved what I played because I thought I'll do it, but I'm only going to play music I like. And 36 years later, I still do the same thing. I just play music I like. People like what I play. And so to me, that's a win-win. But the irony is, in recent years, I've had this big, massive show called Hacienda Classical where I perform with Peter Hook, formerly of New Order, which is a bizarre, I still think it's bizarre that a musician from a band that I loved, two bands that I loved, Joy Division and New Order, is now a colleague and a friend.
Right. Yeah, brilliant. Fantastic. Yeah.
So I perform with the Manchester Camerata Orchestra, the Hacienda Classical Show with Peter Hook, and I was a singer in the bands I used to be in when I was younger. More by accident, by design, I ended up doing Blue Monday in one of the shows because Peter Hook couldn't do the show, And I said, well, someone's got to do it. I just sang Blue Monday.
And I've ended
Yes. I did it at a rehearsal.
No pressure. No. Only the biggest selling 12-inch single of all time. Yeah. That's all.
I know, but I know the words, don't I? So,
that's true.
So it went down so well that after that, I ended up doing my own songs in the show. So by complete luck, after 36 years of DJing, I've actually gone back to being a singer in a band, which is what I wanted to do, albeit on a much grander scale, playing at Glastonbury, Royal Albert Hall, big festivals. It's just such a buzz. I still can't believe it.
You're listening to the Best 11 podcast from Talk Sport.
So we just want to talk about your match day rituals. Can you talk us through what it was like when you used to go to a game up in Aberdeen when you were in your teens or early 20s, whenever?
Well, obviously, I mean, I would love to say that I go to Pittodrie or go to games regularly, but as someone who DJs at weekends and who lives in the northwest of England, which is pretty far from Aberdeen, I haven't been to as many matches as I'd have loved to. However, I've always been good when I get booking inquiries for gigs in Scotland, anywhere in Scotland, from the months of August to May. I will always cross-reference the Aberdeen fixture list to see.
Good lad.
Can we do it the following week instead? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I do. Over the years, I've been to a lot of Aberdeen away games in the Central Belt. You know, Rangers, Celtic, Motherwell, Kilmarnock, St Mirren, and so I've been to all those grounds. And obviously, I do get to been to Pittodrie as often as I can, especially. It doesn't happen so much, but about 20 years ago, you had a lot of midweek games. You don't have them so much now. And in the days when it was the end of the 90s, I would regularly just catch a flight from Manchester to Aberdeen, get the game in, get a hotel and come back the next day. But what I used to always do, and I still do it now childishly, red socks and red pants, basically.
Is that your lucky combination?
Yeah, but they're not the same socks and not the same
pants. That's a bonus.
Yeah. Graham, I was going to ask you just quickly, because we do cover these kind of things on the programme, and I know they had a reputation, but the Aberdeen soccer casuals, as they were as known in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, but they were sort of ahead of the game, weren't they, the way they dressed, and they kind of brought that whole trendy casual thing to Scotland, didn't they, by travelling into Europe and being influenced by what they've seen, you know?
Famously, you know, everyone talks about how that it was Liverpool that did that, and yes, they did. But at the same time, when Aberdeen were, you know, a decent force across Europe, the Aberdeen casual movement was massive. And you know, as someone who's always kind of loved that kind of casual mod type of look as a young man, and I know Mark did as well. You'd be aware of that when you went to Aberdeen games. And of course, we've always had a massive away support, probably the biggest away support in Scotland. I mean, obviously Rangers and Celtic have the biggest home crowds, but I can guarantee that, you know, Aberdeen away support is much bigger than Rangers or Celtic support.
It's interesting that, isn't it?
It's probably down to the fact we're a one city, well, until recently we were a one team city. Of course, we've now got Cove Rangers have suddenly appeared.
Well, you were a county team as well, weren't you? Aberdeen and Aberdeenshire, also, and the whole of that area of Scotland all supported Aberdeen, didn't they?
No, absolutely. And of course, in our trophy cabinet, which I've been very, very fortunate to be in the boardroom and see that trophy cabinet, alongside the Cup Winners' Cup and the FA Cups and the League Cups and the League titles, there is the Aberdeenshire Cup, which we've won every single year since.
Because you're the only team in Aberdeenshire, which is why.
No. There's a lot. You've got Forest Mechanics and Peterhead and Fraserburgh.
Tough opposition, Graham. Tough opposition. You did well.
They are. That Highland League's a really competitive league, let me tell you that.
There you go.
I love the Scots. The Mechanics.
Don't try and take the Michael now with your London
Mechanics
ways.
Are my new favourite team, I've got to be honest with you.
Yeah, Forest Mechanics.
Great name. Actually, now that you talked about you've been in the trophy room, it's logical for me to now ask you the question, what's your favourite piece of memorabilia or memento? Because I like to think you stole it from the trophy cabinet, but that may not be true.
I would have loved to. Me and a really good friend of mine called Mike Grieve, who owns a sub club in Glasgow, we've got contacts. We always had contacts at Pittodrie, and we got to go to the boardroom and hold the replica of the Cup Winners' Cup and the replica of the Super Cup. And that was great. We got lots of photos. But my favourite piece of memorabilia, which is in a box in the attic somewhere, is from my cousin's husband. My cousin Wendy married a guy called Ernie Drews. They're still married. And Ernie used to play for Aberdeen.
Wow.
So, yeah, exactly. He never made it into the first team, but he played in the reserves a lot. And he just got me a piece of headed notepaper with the team's signature on it. And it was probably mid-70s. So I think Joe Harper was back at his second spell at Pittodrie. And that's a great thing.
Yeah, definitely.
There was a ball as well, but I don't know where that's gone to.
I just want to go back just quickly, because you just referenced it there, the European Cup Winners' Cup. I remember it very vividly, you winning the final. And I think people now kind of like do a short gasp. I mean, you did beat Real Madrid, managed by Alfredo Di Stefano, in that final in Gothenburg. It was an extraordinary thing, wasn't it?
It was. I was 19 and I was living at my parents in the East Midlands. And, you know, I would have loved to have gone, but I just couldn't afford it. I just had no way of going. And so I was relying on the television. But it was a great, great run under Ferguson. Bayern Munich in the semi-final, you know. It was just amazing. And we won it on merit as well.
Absolutely. And, of course,
the previous year and the following year, for about 3 or 4 years, We beat Ipswich Town, the holders of the European Cup, the following season before getting knocked out, and gave Liverpool a great two-legged game. We lost ultimately, but it was in the days. I mean, come on, it's fair to say that until Sky Television came along and pumped the money into English football, the Scottish top flight and English top flight, They were a lot closer than they.
Something of a level playing field. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely! I mean, if you look at the results, like when Celtic played Leeds in the late '60s, early '70s, they won.
Proper contests.
And
they?
Even till quite recently, remember Celtic beating Liverpool with John Hartson scored the winner.
Yeah.
You know,
well, exactly.
And I think, I mean, Ferguson talks about this quite a lot. Obviously, as an Aberdonian yourself, the rigs were up and running. Aberdeen was an affluent place. You could keep players there, couldn't you? And people could afford a lot of games.
Get a nice house, get some decent wages.
It all came together, didn't it, Graham?
No, it did. And of course, you know, people like, we produce great players like Joe Jordan, for example.
Dennis Law is an Aberdeen boy, isn't he?
Exactly, Dennis Law. He never played for Aberdeen, but he was an Aberdeen boy. It was much closer, but then, of course, the wages increased ridiculously in England. So occasionally Rangers and Celtic would break the bank to get big name players in, like, which kind of backfired, I think, and a lot of, I mean, Aberdeen even tried that for a while, but that backfired. But you know, as much as I do occasionally watch English football, only because I got Sky Sports free when I signed up for Sky Sports football.
Spoken like a true Scotsman.
Yes,
there.
You bought Sky Sports for the Scottish football, and they gave you the biggest league in the world for nothing. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, it was a special deal, right? Scottish football is finally on one channel instead of having to get BT Sports and Sky Sports and Premier Sports as well. It's now all on Sky. So I thought, right, I don't want to buy anything I don't need. So I just wanted to buy the channel, which is Sky Sports Football. And then it said, for a limited time, you can have Sky Sports Premier League as part of the deal. I'm like, yes, I may as well. So I do keep my eye on it.
I must ask, though, in that case, Graham.
I was just going to say, though, Graham, because I talked to Mark about this, and we talk about this on the show, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but you might if you did. So the really cool thing for the last 10, 15 years has been to go to Germany to watch football, you know, the kind of the football hipster thing. But I don't know if you know this. Yeah. It's become very fashionable among some football fans to go to Scotland to watch Scottish football. And I've been going to watch Scottish football for a long time, sort of 30 years. I've been going back and forth. I got mates who were Queen's Park fans, so the lower league stuff as well. And I've been across to watch Celtic and all that. And it is, I mean, it's hard to explain to somebody who hasn't gone how brilliant it is to go and watch Scottish domestic football. It's a fantastic day out, isn't it?
No, it is, because you haven't got all that kind of over-the-top razzmatazz that I think winds me up. And I'll tell you, something that makes me really proud is I've got twin boys. They're almost 16. And my wife and her family are from Liverpool. So they were brought up as Liverpool supporters. And I had to take them to Anfield, which is great, you know, go and take them. But one of them now is not interested in football at all. And the other twin has kind of got into Aberdeen. And so he's been to Hampden with me for a few semi-finals and a couple of finals in the past 2 years ago. we were watching an Aberdeen Cup game on the telly, and he just said, "Dad, I've decided I'm going to be 100% full Aberdeen supporter now rather than Liverpool." And I'm like, "Whoa, what? Are you serious?" He goes, "Yeah." I goes, "Why? Tell me why." He says, "Well, there's three reasons, I suppose. One, Scottish football players don't have those ridiculous haircuts that they have in England."
Good. Tick. Yeah.
Two, they're not overpaid for what they do, right? It's all about getting a gig and doing it for the passion of it. And he says, but three, look at our squad. Apart from Thomas Czerny, our Polish second keeper, our entire squad, our entire squad.
Oh, emotions, Graham.
Are from the British Isles and the Republic of Ireland.
Yeah.
And I went, oh my God. And so he's been to Pittodrie with me to see Celtic game, and he joins me on the sofa for the pay-per-view at the moment because we can't go to the games. And it makes me proud that my half-English, half-Scottish son, who was born on St Andrew's Day, is a proper Aberdeen fan.
Don, I mean, I've said I'm going to take Mark and our producer here, Jamie, up to a Scottish game, hopefully when all this COVID stuff clears up.
Oh, you should try and go.
Honestly, they'd love it.
Because yeah. In 2 years' time, it will be knocked down and built into houses before they go to the new stadium. And to go back to what I said earlier, it's not that different to how it was when I was a kid either.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I'm saying.
Makes a point. Perhaps we should get in early before they destroy
it. It's like going to watch it before the hipsters turn up, guys, and gentrify it. Do you know what I mean? That's what's going to happen.
And can I just commend, only a DJ could have double decks for kids. That is commendable. Yeah. Fancy you having the ones and twos. That's amazing, Graham. How did you plan that out? I don't know.
I don't know, but the fact that they were born in England on St Andrew's Day is just...
That's even more macabre, isn't it? Yeah, exactly. Lovely.
The Best 11 podcast from TalkSport.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
This is the Best 11 podcast with Johnny Owen and Mark Webster.
What's your favourite ever kit?
Well, it's a toss-up between two. I'll tell you what they are. I almost said the famous Admiral strip with the five stripes down the left.
Yeah.
You know the five vertical stripes down the left that go into the shorts? But I have to say my favourite kit is the Adidas with the white pinstripes.
Yeah.
Because that is the strip we wore in Gothenburg when Willie Miller lifted the Cup Winners' Cup.
Do you know, we were just saying to Adrian Dunbar, who's from Line of Duty, his favourite Arsenal kit is the very famous 1971 Cup Final yellow and blue kit with Charlie George. And, you know, it's a bit like Forest. Everybody's favourite Forest kit is the late 70s. If it's tied up in something like when you won the European Cup Winners' Cup, it's going to have a special place in your heart, isn't it?
No, absolutely. But it's just a great kit. It hasn't got any stupid styling on. That late 90s, well, so I suppose 80s and 90s was some really hideous styling going on. But it's just a classic
kit. I'll tell you what it had, though. It had a weird snakeskin shimmer to it. It was one of those shiny kits.
Yeah, the Adidas shiny kits.
Yeah, that looked like water should run off.
But the logo, the ball for the A, with the A around it.
It was just slightly weird. Just beautiful, wasn't it? Just a kind of slightly weird sheen upon it, but which made it distinctive, so you can't knock it. Okay, well, that's a good kit, isn't it? Yeah.
It's a great show.
What's your best team that's not yours? And this will prove interesting because you've got plenty of options outside of Scotland, haven't you? Clearly.
No, I have. Right. For example, when I moved to the East Midlands, I used to go and see Forrest, and Clough was manager.
Right.
It's a
good time to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then I moved to London and had this stupid notion that I should go to watch the team that was nearest to my house because, you know, I didn't want to show any preference. So I got the pen and paper and the ruler out. And then after going to see them for a few games, realised I'd really messed up. But that was Crystal Palace.
Oh, bad luck. Seems harsh. No, that's not fair.
No, but I mean, it was fun. And then one of my best friends in London was a Burnley supporter. So we'd often go and see, go up and see Burnley. When I moved to the Northwest, Pickering would take me to see City. Other friends would take me to see United. And then the radio station that I was on, KISS, that became Galaxy, had a sponsorship arrangement with Bolton Wanderers, so I used to go there. But one of my friends, who was my next-door neighbour for a while, Lee McCullough, who former Rangers, he played for Wigan Athletic at the time, so I'd quite often, if he had a Saturday lunchtime match, I'd just jump in the car and go up to Wigan with him. However, as a Scottish football fan, I can't really show any favour to anyone. My favourite team that's not Aberdeen is AC Milan because I have currently got 3 Alfa Romeos on my drive and I've had 15 Alfa Romeos in my life. And Milan is the home of Alfa Romeo.
I thought you were going to go with Joe Jordan had played it there, I got to be honest, but you've gone with Alfa
Romeo. Oh, no, yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah,
and not least, of course, you've got a second-hand showroom. Yes, apparently, it seems.
Yes. And Graham, you sound like a man after my own heart. Everywhere I've gone and lived, I always go to watch football teams.
It's nice. Yeah. We've got to do this here. You mentioned Pickering there. Legendarily, this is Mike Pickering, your other half at the Hacienda for 10 glorious years during those great years.
Love City, exactly. United.
Love City, hates United. And I know through personal experience of talking to him, he's not an England follower.
No.
And yet, Graham Parker, Mike Pickering, remix World in Motion.
Yes.
How does this happen, Mr. Park?
Right. Well, obviously, World in Motion was the New Order song for the England. Was it 96?
1990.
Sorry, 1990. Sorry. Shows you how much I care about it.
You've won. You've already won Graham.
Exactly. That's
you've
the end
already
of that
won.
Conversation. Yeah.
So. New Order wanted me and Mike to remix it, and as you said, Mike not bothered, and me I don't want to mix it because I can't be seen to be involved in anything to do with an England football team. But of course, it was New Order, and Peter Hook just kind of persuaded us and put the pressure on. You're one of the DJs at Hacienda. You've got to do it, and so I'm quite pleased. I must admit, we deliberately did a dub mix that we could play at Hacienda with.
So that you didn't have to have the World in Motion foot? No, that's low.
So we didn't
surely John Barnes's rap stayed, though, didn't it?
In our remix, yes, you did the main 12-inch Park and Pickering club mix, but then we did the dub mix with no vocals.
You got rid of it all.
Did
you have many City or United during the glory years at Hacienda come along for a dance?
Ryan Giggs would often pop up in the DJ box.
Would he?
Yeah, but he would really look out of place because he'd just be there in his V-neck and his slacks. just taking it all in, you know.
He liked the music, didn't he? I guess that was the point he was there.
He'd just pop his head in, yeah. But I'm not really aware of any others, to be honest.
Right, this is the toughest bit of the show. We're going to have to take you through your best Aberdonian team now, Graham.
Well, by chance, right? I got asked this very question by Aberdeen Football Club for the 30th September 2017 match day programme when we were at home to St Johnstone.
So we all remember it, Graham.
Brilliant.
Exactly. It's pretty much exactly 3 years ago this weekend. And the thing is, they did a big feature on me because along with Paul Laurie, the golfer, You'd be hard pressed to find any
celebrity Aberdeen fans.
I wouldn't say celebrity, well known Aberdeen fans. And so, because I was at that game, they said, let's do a feature. So I picked my all time 11, but I'd like to maybe go through it, but do two changes because in three years, things have changed. Okay. So
my goalkeeper
would be Jim Leighton, basically, because he's the keeper that I probably saw the most in the 80s and the 90s. But not just at Aberdeen, I saw him play in England as well. And going back to our earlier point, I think Jim Leighton is the keeper who finally put Scotland's goalkeeper.
The worm had turned with him in goal, hadn't it? He was a really good goalie.
And of course, maximum respect to someone who, the later years of his England career, his career in England went a bit off, but he came back to Aberdeen and rediscovered his form.
He did.
So Leighton in goal.
Great.
And then I've got a back four. First of all, Willie Miller, obviously.
Solid, stoic, superb,
constantly reliable, the best defender we've ever had, and a pretty good manager as well.
True.
So Willie Miller. Then I would go for Alex McLeish because it's an incredible partnership with Willie Miller. Mm-hmm. And he's such a nice guy. I don't hold any grudges for the fact he went on to manage Rangers.
Often mentioned, yes.
Then I've got Stuart Kennedy as well.
Yep.
Hard-working and skillful at the back. Now, 3 years ago, I had Russell Anderson in my back four.
Okay.
Anderson, an amazing defender who is donned through and through. But since doing that, I might actually put Considine in there instead of Amsterdam.
Okay.
He's been amazing the past two or three seasons, even scoring goals and coming up front from the back. So that's my back four.
Not bad. Not bad at all.
So my midfield would have to be Gordon Strachan.
Yes.
Yep.
Absolute joy to watch as he cut through any defence with skill and style. Then Ian Jess, exciting player. I was just a few feet away from him at Hampden when Rangers lost to Aberdeen in the Scottish Cup semi-final. And Ian Jess just totally ripped the mick out of Gascoigne.
well put.
Totally showed him up. So Ian Jess. And then I'd have Peter Weir in there.
Yes.
Yeah.
He had a great left foot. And, of course, the legendary Neil Simpson. Mm-hmm. Neil Simpson. But in the past 3 years, I might consider replacing Weir with Graham Shinney, who was an incredible captain before he went off to Derby. So there you go. Mm. And then up front, easy for me, didn't have to think about it. Joe Harper.
Absolute legend. Yes. Yep.
Yeah, he went to Everton, but then he came back to Aberdeen and he was still a great player. And of course, Steve Archibald, who formed a great partnership for a couple of seasons with Joe Harper before going on to Tottenham Hotspur.
And Barcelona. And a legend in Barcelona
shabby a career.
No, not too shabby a side as well, mate. I mean, the only one I'd possibly say is Mark McGee. You've left up Mark McGee, which is fair enough.
Yeah, Mark McGee's great, but he kind of tarnished his reputation a bit when he was manager.
Okay, that's understandable.
Let's not go there. He's still a legend. He's still an Aberdeen legend.
Yeah, yeah. And also, I mean, looking at the centre-half partnership there, Miller and McLeish, a legendary centre-half partnership and a Scottish, as the Scotland national team as well as the Aberdeen
team with Leighton in goals. That triangle, that's solid. You mentioned manager there, and I thought perhaps it was going to be Mark McGee, but who else could there possibly be?
Yeah, who could have as manager of Aberdeen? Come on, Graham, who's it going to be?
My manager?
Yeah.
Well, it has to be Sir Alex, doesn't it?
No way! Get out! Why would you possibly...
Shock horror!
but can I just say, McInnes, he is absolutely brilliant, along with Tony Docherty as well. The pair of them, honestly, unbelievable. They're doing an amazing job, considering the fact our budget is a tenth of Celtic's or something stupid like that. We can't throw money around like the old firm do. And, you know, like Rangers got massive debt, but they still throw money at things, you know. Our new chairman, Dave Cormack, has taken over a well-run club that doesn't have any debt, and he's tied us up with Atlanta United. And
That's got to be your new local team, Parker. You've got to move to New York and then go and watch Atlanta games. That's what you've got to do.
Yeah, but do you not remember? You're old enough to remember, Mark.
Thank you.
He's old enough to remember the French Revolution.
Hey!
In the 70s, where Pelly and George Best played.
Cosmos and all that. Yeah.
Aberdeen were the Washington Whips. If
what?
You remember, they set up teams, and I think Aberdeen and Hibs and it might have been Kilmarnock, all just went over and just were different teams. And Aberdeen were the Washington Whips. And if you look up the Washington Whips on the internet, you'll see this amazing logo with a top hat and a whip.
Brilliant.
And the strip is superb. Oh, so
their strips were fantastic.
US soccer, the Scottish years, is a chapter I was just of gonna, the book. I just want to
talk a little bit about Sir Alex Ferguson, as he is now, and his relationship with Aberdeen. I mean, he's deeply loved there, and he loves Aberdeen. I know he's had the freedom of the city, and he actually goes back there quite a lot. I mean, it is a deep love and bond between Ferguson and that club, isn't it?
It is, but what he was so successful at was using the old firm biased West Coast Scottish media as a tool to wind up the team northeast. Because even now, I mean, obviously, I check the Daily Record and the Sunday Mail for the football news, and it winds me up. The bloody world does not revolve around Celtic and Rangers. It just absolutely does not. And I think McInnes does a bit of that as well, you know. So, yeah, but he was just magnificent. He just wanted to prove a point, I think, really. And what better way to prove it than to win? I mean, to win the top flight a few times, win a few Scottish Cups and a couple of League Cups. Oh, and by the way, the only Scottish team to win more than one European trophy. So I don't care those five stupid stars that Rangers have on their back. What the hell does that mean? It means nothing. But the two stars on the Aberdeen logo are two European Cup, the Cup Winners' Cup and the Super Cup.
Wow.
It is, let's be fair, it is a remarkable
achievement. Oh, yes, and sorry, mentioning Rangers reminds me that Aberdeen are the only team in Scotland who've never been relegated.
Well, Scott, and by the way, it's probably worth pointing out.
That's a great way to end that.
Only Sir Alex Ferguson, Graham Park, could come from Aberdeen and make their living and their names down in Manchester. You are writ large together forever, aren't you, you two?
It's beautiful. That's a beautiful, that's a beautiful mic drop, that is, Graham. The only club never to be relegated.
See you later.
Absolutely fantastic.
And Mike, and Parky can drop a mic as well, by the way. I've seen him do it, yes.
I do it in front of 60,000 people.
It's true.
Graham, it's been absolutely fantastic to have you on. Keep in touch with us. Hopefully we get you back on the show again. But have a wonderful day.
Stand free.
The Best 11 podcast from Talk Sport.
Thank you for listening to the Best 11 podcast. Don't forget there are new episodes out every Monday and Thursday. So join us for more football memories and another Best 11 very soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.